You're listening to Coming of Cage, a Nicolas Cage podcast.
Welcome back to the Coming of Cage podcast, your Nicolas Cage movie review podcast. I am one of your two hosts, Derek, and your other host, Ryan, is right over here.
I am. Over here.
Over there in your other ear or on the other side of the screen or something like that.
Depending on how you're viewing. Yes.
Yeah.
Or listening.
Well, this is episode 48 of our show. So we are talking our 48th Nicolas Cage movie. This week, it is 2011's Seeking Justice, which is an action crime drama. It's quote, after his wife is assaulted, a husband enlists the services of a vigilante group to help him settle the score. Then he discovers they want a favor from him in return. Not the greatest synopsis of the movie.
No.
But that's what it is. Directed by Roger Donaldson, who people may know directed movies like Species, Dante's Peak, 13 Days, No Way Out. Stars Nicolas Cage, of course, as well as January Jones and Guy Pearce. Those are the other two bigger names in the film. And that's it. That's kind of the movie there. Ryan, why don't you take us through what we do here?
We review Nicolas Cage movies.
Awesome. That's great. That's good stuff. That's good stuff right there.
Nailed it. That's the long and the short of it.
That's fair.
But I do take notes, and we kind of go through those notes chronologically as the movie happens. We are one day later than I was prepared for doing this. And as any longtime listeners know, I lose about 25% of my memory of the movie every day that goes by between when I watch it and when we record. So usually Derek has to help me figure out what some of these notes mean because he still has a young, supple memory.
Yep.
So
that's how I would describe it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to just lead out and say that I expected another kind of like crappy, you know, straight to video kind of movie, but I was actually pleasantly surprised by this movie. I thought it was actually pretty enjoyable. And similar to how like when you watch a John Wick movie and you're like, oh wow, the underground, like, or whatever, the hotel people, the Continental. Man, that would be really cool to learn more about that. Like, it sets up this whole like thing kind of unintentionally. Mm-hmm. This movie kind of gave me that same vibe where I'm like, man, this organization, I would love to see more movies about this organization. But we'll get into that more. That's fair. Yeah, I was impressed by this movie. I actually thought it was one of the better movies I've seen of his from this era of his movies.
Yeah, it was a pretty positive surprise overall. There's definitely a trigger warning for physical and sexual assault at the beginning of the movie. But once you get past that, as bad as that sounds, once you're beyond that, it's actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah, the movie essentially kicks off with a rape, which is a, you know, weird way to start any movie. But it's kind of necessary for the whole thing to happen. So, which is kind of, a weird thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So
the movie I do like that Nick plays kind of a different character in this movie. In most of the movies like this, he plays the tough guy. He plays the guy who knows the weapons and knows how to fight. And yeah, exactly. Right. You know, the Con Air type, the trust or stolen or rage. And he's not that in this. He's kind of he's the nerdy English teacher.
Which doesn't really come into play until there's like one point in the movie where the fact that he's an English teacher actually plays out. But for the rest of the movie, it's not really important at all.
It's other important than the fact that he's not
a tough guy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important that he's a teacher. The fact that he's an English teacher only matters in one moment.
Yeah.
But he is a high school teacher.
So the movie like leads out with some guy who, because the movie's just starting, we have no idea who it is or what he's referencing. He's being recorded and is seemingly admitting something, but we have no idea what this is referencing. I thought it was a really strange way to start the movie. I didn't really love that. It literally is like the guy says two sentences or three sentences of dialogue, and then it just goes to a different scene. And there's no context beyond that until you get like three quarters of the way through the movie.
It felt like something out of like a Mission Impossible James Bond type film.
Which the movie is not.
Right.
So
yeah.
That was weird. So then we go to a scene where this guy in like a Cadillac Escalade is pushing a BMW off like the top of a parking garage using its superior torque. The part of this movie is just an advertisement for GM. We'll get to that.
And Nokia.
Did you catch the GM advertising?
I didn't catch GM. I caught Nokia a bunch of times.
Okay, well, wait. When I start getting into that, you will feel like an idiot probably for not noticing it. So yeah, my second note was BMW off the top rope because the GM product, Cadillac, whatever it was, pushes this BMW off the top of a parking garage and it lands on another car down below.
Yeah, not a subtle way to kill the guy, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah, and so we sometimes have a block on our we do a Keijo bingo, and we're going to be getting like five of these right in a row, bang 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 bang. So get ready for that. But
so many.
On this one, I didn't have takes place in New Orleans. Did you have that on yours?
No.
That's so disappointing. He has basically two places. If you listen to this podcast, you know there's basically two places he sets 90% of his movies. One is New Orleans and one is Las Vegas. That's 90% of the movies that he does. And this one was New Orleans. What even is that facial hair is my next note.
You didn't like his little beard thing he's got going on?
No, it would have been fine if it was more, like if you had more hair there, but the fact that it's like a 5 o'clock shadow, but it's just in like a goatee shape, basically. Like he let this one spot grow out while the rest didn't get grown out.
Okay.
It was weird. It was just weird.
I didn't look too much into it. I did kind of notice that, you know, he's not looking like his normal kind of, you know, leading man type self that he tends to have. You know, he's not as polished in this. He's meant to look a little bit more average guy.
Right. More adaptation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this, we get this scene to kind of set up his character a little bit. We realize he has a wife and a friend couple that they're hanging out with, and they're hanging out at like a club setting kind of. Mm-hmm. We get Nick Cage dances, which is a square on our bingo card, and we get Nick Cage drinks, which is another square on a bingo card. Boom. Same like 5 second period. I was writing these notes down. I'm like, oh, there's another square. Oh, there's another square. It was like a machine gun firing. And then because he's in New Orleans, at some point he puts on this like weird mask.
Yeah. It looks like maybe it's Mardi Gras.
Like, yeah, Mardi Gras mask. It's just unusual because he was like the only one in his friend group wearing this mask.
Yeah,
he's into it, so that's cool. And then this popped up on the screen, and it can't be the person I'm thinking of. It said produced by Tobey Maguire.
Did it really?
Yes, it did. And I went, there's no way that's the Tobey Maguire.
That's really funny. Produced by Tobey Maguire. It's Tobey Maguire.
Is that Tobey Maguire?
It is Spider-Man Peter Parker Tobey Maguire.
Good Lord. Produced
this movie.
Well,
good catch, man. Good catch.
Speaking of spiders, we're just weaving a web of all these weird people that have produced Nick Cage movies over the years. I would love to see like the Always Sunny meme where it's like the conspiracy like yarn across all the pictures. Oh man, if we made one of those with Nick Cage with all these other actors that have produced his movies, it would be ridiculous.
Well, it's really interesting because I noted, I don't think Saturn was involved, and that's Nick's company.
I didn't see them in those.
Yeah. So it's interesting. He didn't produce it, but Tobey Maguire
was like, I want to produce this Nick Cage movie. So then we, of course, get the Nick Cage sex scene. Woo! Which, to their defense, was not gratuitous. There was no nudity. It was just...
Okay, so I'm glad you said that, because so I was watching it on Freevee, and they, you know, tell you why things are rated a certain way, and it specifically said nudity. And I, is there any in the movie?
No, we did not check that box.
I thought we saw like a little bit of boob in that scene, but it was really fast and it didn't seem like there was any like nipple or anything, so I didn't think that counted.
No, I mean, if it was, anything, maybe a little cleavage, but nothing that I would count as nudity.
I agree. Okay.
But yeah, that he's, it seems like, I'm assuming this happened after sex, but the way it's shot makes it seem like in the middle of sex, he just like pulls out and then walks over and gets this gift for her and brings it over to her. Did that seem weird to you too?
I just thought they were done. It seemed like the end of a movie sex scene.
We got like 5 seconds of sex, and then he's getting up and going and walking over to this thing. So it just was a weird cut. That's for me. Fair. But yeah, he gives her this necklace, which comes into play later in the movie, of course, because he can't give somebody a piece of jewelry in a movie. I'm getting vibes from that Alaska Murder movie.
Yeah, if Nicolas Cage hands you some jewelry, you're jewelry, in trouble.
Yeah.
Something bad's going to happen.
Yeah, there's, yeah, never trust it. And then my next note was, I bet she dies. Spoiler alert.
Oh my God.
She does not die, but she probably wishes she did.
Oh my God.
Nick Cage wears glasses.
Yeah.
We got that.
Mm-hmm.
Only for like one scene when he's teaching, he puts on glasses and then doesn't really wear them the rest of the movie. But
I think he did it just for us.
Yeah. He must have. We've get our first shot of what is kind of implied to be the bad guy because he's wearing snakeskin boots. It's just this weird shot where like he gets out of, and I got to give credit to my girlfriend on this one. She's the one that said that he got out. It, like, it shows him from beneath the car and yeah. Shows the boots like hitting the ground. And she goes, "Oh, snakeskin boots must be the bad guy." And I said, "I've got to take that note because that's a good note."
Mm-hmm.
It's just a funny way that they use wardrobe to establish who the good guy and the bad guy is.
Yeah,
and this is a bad guy. He goes and does the... So it was a little unclear for me. I mean, it looks in the scene like he's beating the shit out of her and like steals a necklace. Mm-hmm. But the movie, and this is to its credit, it does not like get really further than that with showing what's happening. You right. Only really learn that it was a rape afterwards when there's some scenes of him in the hospital with her.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, during the scene, I wasn't sure that that was what was happening. It was just fine. I'm not upset that it doesn't need to like be clear in that scene because they cleared it up immediately after. But a lot of movies would have gone another step with that to make it clear what was happening.
I agree. I'm glad they didn't. I kind of liked that they didn't take it any farther than that, because it wasn't really necessary. I had made the leap once they were in the back seat that's what was happening. But yeah.
Yeah. So he's, I don't remember what he was doing. He was playing chess with his friend,
which apparently is a no phones zone, I'm the type of person who, if it's a no phone situation, I'm very likely to not do whatever.
I personally think that there should be more places like that around.
I'm cool with them existing, and there are certain, but like for emergency purposes, you know, I feel very uncomfortable having my phone off.
I mean, if I'm going someplace to play a game of chess for an hour, I feel like I'm going to be okay with having my phone off for an hour, but I also don't have a kid.
Oh, I've had this problem for a long time. It's I'm not saying that it's a healthy way to live.
Screen addiction. Yes. That's what it sounds like to you.
No. I don't have to be on it. I need to be reachable. It's a compulsion to be reachable.
Yeah. That's also a problem though.
That's a problem. Yeah.
But you know, being concerned that there's an emergency or whatever is not a problem. It's just, but yes, this is a no phone zone. We're kind of getting off topic here. It's a no phone zone, which is essential to the plot because he needs to come out of this chess match after his wife has been assaulted, and he goes to the hospital and finds out what happened. And he's, you know, obviously having a lot of emotions about it.
She's messed up. The makeup people did a good job.
Yeah, it was very realistic. They, And this is all in like the first 15 minutes.
It's a lot.
It's very early in the movie, so it gets very heavy very quickly. While he's like in the hospital with her, he's at one point sitting in like a waiting room. Mm-hmm. And this guy shows up sitting behind him, and it's kind of a trope in movies where this like mysterious stranger shows up and knows everything about you and everything that just happened and wants you to trust him right away.
And this is Guy Pearce's character. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is Simon.
Yeah. He shows up and he goes, Will, you know, he's like, knows his name right away. Will has no idea who this guy is. Will is Nicolas Cage's character, Will Gerard. And he's, you know, he's like, shame what happened to your wife. Yeah, you think it's a fucking shame? Like, it's just a really, he's very casual about it. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a thing about his character throughout the whole movie, is that he's very casual about very serious things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he brings up the fact that there's an organization, if he's seeking justice, that might need to be a bingo space too, says the title of the movie somewhere, because that's just kind of a movie and TV show trope anyway. But yeah, he says that if you're seeking justice, there's a group that can, this guy has done this before and recently got parole or whatever.
And, yeah. They made the snakeskin boot guy to be a very one dimensional bad guy, right? He's been on parole for 3 weeks. He's done it before and he'll do it again. Like, the idea here is to set up this scene so that the entire audience is like on board with Nick's decision.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, it doesn't really take a lot to do that, because I mean, most people in that situation would probably be like, yeah, fucking go kill the guy.
Get please. The dude. Yeah.
But yeah, so he basically offers to kill this guy. And if they do that, then he does, to Nick's character's credit, make it seem like he's not going to be pulled to do a favor, like murder somebody. He's going to be pulled to do a favor. He specifically says like make a call or
drop talk to off somebody or
drop there, something yeah. off. Yeah. He makes it sound like it's just this little thing he's going to have to do and it's no big deal. And so Nick, you know, thinks about it and he refuses at first, but then he stops Simon and says, you know, well, let me think about it or something like that. And Simon says, well, if you want to go or if you want to do it, then go to the third floor outside the oncology ward. There's a vending machine and you buy two of these candy bars. Forever bars. Yeah. And that'll let us know that you want it. And so he goes up there because obviously he's going to say yes. And at this point, I did like this part where it's like he's not sure who or what is watching him in this room, because he knows somebody's watching him because he's supposed to buy these bars, but he doesn't know who it is. So
I mean, I think it's both of those guys. By the end of the movie, I'm pretty confident it was the dude in the booth and the cop.
Yeah, there was like a camera pointed at it, and then there was like a cop that was overly friendly coming over. Like, well, not a cop, but it's like a security guard.
I mean, he looked like police, but
he looked like he was just watching the hospital, like a security guard at the hospital.
He was very invested in what Nick was buying in that vending machine.
Yeah, and then there was another guy just like randomly sitting in a chair in the room also that wasn't really looking at it or anything like that. So then because he says yes, he buys the candy bars, whatever. We get to see the process by which this group works, which is important because they need to establish, you know, the rules of this group.
Right.
And the way it seems to work at this point is that somebody else that had a similar situation happen to them is tasked to go and murder this guy. And that's how they keep it. So it seems like it's not connected. Like Nick Cage won't be under investigation. You know, this other random person will kill this random guy that they don't know. They just know that they did something bad.
And I mean, from a logistic standpoint, the plans all kind of work.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's actually pretty well thought out for the most part.
Simon's a smart guy.
Yeah. And, you know, later we'll get into it, but it begs the question, is this how the group actually operates? Because it's implied later that Simon is kind of like off his gourd and he's the leader of this part of the group, but we don't know how that's part of the reason why I thought more movies in the same universe, you know, across the country or whatever, would be interesting to see, like, how the different sects of the group operate.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they all operate the same way. You know, there was some interesting stuff that could have been done there. But yeah, so I put murder, but not casual, because it wasn't casual. The guy that was doing the murder was very stressed out.
Mm-hmm.
It was he did not want to be there. He did not want to be doing this. So everybody that is doing these favors, in air quotes, for Simon is somebody that probably doesn't want to be that. They're not professional killers. They're just guys doing this thing, and they're stressed the fuck out, which is the only part that doesn't really line up to me, because they're going to make mistakes and something will give them away because they're panicked and freaking out. Simon is pretty good at covering the tracks, though.
I think that's the key. Since everybody is disconnected from each other in reality, there's nothing tying anybody to anybody else. And then you find out throughout the movie how ingrained this group is throughout the culture. I mean, they're part of the police. They're part of the press. You know, so if you get caught, like Nicholas Will gets caught, but there's a lieutenant there who's part of the group and he gets him out, right? So, like, I think Simon's got all of that covered.
Yeah, I mean, we find out later that he's got people in the police station and stuff like that. So he's pretty well covered. But yeah, so we see the murder happen, and then it cuts to 6 months later.
Right.
Where Nick gets a mysterious phone call. Big surprise. The favor's being called in. And he is asked to... He gets like a mysterious package that gets dropped off to him, and it's basically showing pictures of this couple, or the, not a couple, but like a mom and a daughter, and then some other dude. And he's supposed to go to the zoo and follow this woman and her daughter around and watch for this one specific guy. And if this one specific guy shows up, he's supposed to call this number and say the rabbit jumps out of the hole or something like that. This is like his code phrase. It's used throughout the whole movie. Like, no, it's not just his code phrase. That's like one that's used by lots of people throughout the movie.
One thing I think is worth noting is that, you know, when they return, you know, home from the hospital, Laura's wife, she wants to make some changes. And I think this is relevant to later in the movie, where she wants to get like a gun. She wants to have a gun, and Will originally tells her no, that he doesn't want guns in the house. And, you know, we learn that she doesn't go along with that. She wants to do it her own way. And so she starts getting lessons and gets her own gun and stuff. And so I think that impact is important, because it comes back to play later. She's kind of home all the time at this point, outside of going to her rehearsals. She's in an orchestra.
Yeah. And she also wants bars on the window, and she wants the locks changed.
Mm-hmm.
And we never really see the bars on the window, and that really comes into play, but you know, that was before the 6 months later thing, so we assume at some point those things have been changed. And for what it's worth, we do see a scene of her like having a really burly man instructing her on how to shoot a gun. So
right, yep.
But anyway, yeah, she's he's at the zoo watching this girl and or this woman and her daughter, and he does not see this guy at all.
Mm-hmm.
who he's told is a kid diddler, a child molester, whatever you want to, however you want to describe that. He's a bad man, a child pornographer, I think, also, like, they give a whole list,
all the bad stuff,
yeah, of things that he's done. And he's
again like another example of like, there's no possible way for somebody to be like, well, maybe.
Right. Nick, there's no redemption.
Yeah. You know? Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he doesn't see this guy. And so that he leaves, and he gets a call the next day saying that, oh, you're going to have a car problem in the morning, so you're going to have to take the bus. And so when you get off this exit for this bus on your way to school, just wait a few minutes for the next bus to come around, because that's where this guy gets off every day, and we're gonna make sure there's no cameras, and you're gonna push this guy off of the rail, because this walkway, or the like, the where you get off of this bus is like a walkway over the highway with a low hanging or a low bar, so you could push somebody over it without much trouble. And so he gets out in the morning and he sees that he has a flat tire. Somebody stabbed his tire, it looks like. And so he gets on the bus and he goes and he gets off at that exit. But then no. I think he gets back on this time.
Or he doesn't get like off that. The first time. He just stays on. He lets it go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't actually go. No murder from him. But they went from the jump from stalking this couple to murder real quick. And he thought he was just doing one favor. Mm-hmm. But then they ask him to kill the guy, which would have been a second favor at that point. And so when he doesn't kill the dude, he goes out to dinner with his wife that night, and Simon shows up to dinner pretending to be an old colleague of his.
Simon Smooth. You know, he inserts himself into this conversation. He's got banter and stories, you know, they're like old buddies, and Laura doesn't, you know, she has no reason to not believe the guy. She doesn't know about any of this that's going on. So, yeah, she's very kind of welcoming and friendly. And Will is like ready to like, snap.
Yeah, it's a little weird because, you know, obviously Will doesn't want him there, but when he comes over, his wife literally invites the guy to sit down with him. And so he sits down and is trying to talk to him and stuff. And Will is immediately like, I'm sorry, but this is a private affair. And it's like, your wife literally just told him to sit down. So she's clearly fine with it. But it was meant to be an uncomfortable scene, but yeah, that part just didn't make sense.
Yeah. I think it was just, he was trying to find a way that would get Simon to leave without like raising suspicion with his wife, because Laura doesn't know about any of this stuff till so much later in the movie. Like, he's being really deceptive at this point. And, you know, there's an argument to be made as to why, right? But he's trying to get Simon out of there without saying the thing.
Right. And when he gets back to the apartment, he goes, he sees that there's a message written for some reason, even though they don't have kids or whatever, they have a bunch of these letter magnets on their fridge.
I mean, maybe that's just a thing that people have. Maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
And there's a word spelled out on there. I can't remember what Choose. It was. Choose. Okay. Yeah. It was something ominous. Yeah. And so he sees that, and he scrambles up the letters, and he tells his wife that, I'm going to step outside for a second. I got to take a phone call. Which I don't know why you need to step outside your own house. That would seem immediately red flag to me.
I think he said he left something in the car.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
You know, now so that's a line that's common like in movies and TV, but it always drives me nuts. Cause like, what did you leave in the car? You just left something in the car. Just so, like you left your phone in the car. You left your wallet in the car, like pick an object.
So he goes out of the apartment and he makes sure to lock the door and everything. Like, it shows him consciously closing and locking the door, and he goes and calls Simon, and then when he comes back, the door is open. Mm-hmm. And then he goes back in and the fridge has the message on it again, and his wife says something like, oh, I thought you were already back, I heard somebody walking around out there. Spooky. And so of course he's in major panic mode.
Yeah.
So the next morning he does the same thing with the bus, except he gets off at the exit. And when he gets off and he goes down the like overpass thing, and he's waiting at the end, and like it's the least casual thing ever. He's like sweating bullets, and he's like pacing back and forth, like staring all around him. And it's worth noting that at this point he hasn't been told that the cameras are going to be off.
Yeah, no, Simon told him that they disabled the cameras.
They said that the day before.
Well, I think
initially supposed to do the murder.
Yeah.
The second day they didn't. He didn't say it. Like, that was never stated.
Fair enough.
I took it as, well, now he's going to be on camera, but Simon's probably going to handle it some other way. And gotcha. It is on camera because Simon gets the footage later.
I don't think the cameras were ever disabled.
Probably not. But yeah, the guy eventually starts walking across the overpass thing with his bike, and he sees Nick Cage's character there, and something about him causes it to freak out. Like, he knew what the guy was there to do, or he knew that the guy... We find out later why, but at this point, we don't really know why he freaked out when he saw him. But he kind of attacks him, like, throws his bike at him, and the bike gets thrown over the overpass, and then he goes to, like, push Nick Cage's character off the ledge, and he kind of ducks. And so the guy, of course, goes flying off the low bridge and into traffic and dies. So yeah, I had an accidental murder again, not casual, but it wasn't really murder. It was more just like accidental falling death. Off accidental a bridge death. While you were there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, I really don't know how that would work in like an actual court of law, because like,
if you're having a fight on an overpass and you fall off into traffic underneath.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
well, yeah, I don't know either. If you punch somebody and they get knocked down, they fall and hit their head on the pavement and die, then you're responsible for it. So I imagine it would be treated similar to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, he goes to school right after this, and I can't remember exactly what happens, but he ends up punching a student in the face.
They're in like the auditorium at school. There's like a play going on, or like practice, like rehearsal type stuff. And a couple of the kids are like kind of going at it a little bit, not like a full on brawl or anything, but there's like, they're shoving and posturing and everything. And one of those kids is shown throughout the movie to maybe not necessarily be the most like proper kid. He's kind of a troublemaker, kind of thing, setting that up. And so Nick tries to get involved, and the dude swings at him, misses, and then Will just clocks him, which like, I actually like, I audibly was like, oh, it's like, yeah. You can't do that. I can't believe it's just a 3-week suspension.
Well, also the kid drops some casual discrimination in there.
Did he
get that? Yeah, he says the F word slur for gay people.
Oh, well, I missed that, but okay.
Yeah, so that's that. Casual discrimination is on our bingo card, so
yeah.
But yeah, then he goes home because he's suspended, and his wife asks why he's home, and he says something like, oh, it was a student teacher conferences today or something, and she goes, oh really, well, your friend who also works at the school called me and told me what happened. Why are you lying to me?
Yeah, because they have like this tight-knit group. So like, if you go back to the beginning when they are at that Mardi Gras party or whatever, there's the guy he ends up playing chess with. He's also there. He seems to be like the principal of the high school. And then the other girl is, I think, Will's sister.
Makes either sense Will,
I think, right? I'm pretty sure it's either Will's sister or it's Laura's sister. She's very tightly related there. So that's, yeah, it's kind of a weird situation.
So yeah, shortly after this, some cops come to the door and arrest Will.
Real quick.
Yeah, it didn't take any time. Same day. And so, yeah, he gets to the police station. They're questioning him, and he's not really admitting anything. They're saying that one of the cameras conveniently didn't have a tape in it when they got to it, but that they have a tape from the side of where the bus was, and you can see him like running in a panic after it happened back to the bus. But they're implying that they know he murdered him because of that, and which seems like a huge stretch to me.
I mean, that would never hold up in court.
No.
Right? Like, I guess maybe if you had a bad enough lawyer, but like, there's just, the rest is all circumstantial because no one knows what happened there. We just know that he was in the vicinity, but that's not going to be enough.
Right.
You know?
So yeah, then there's like this other cop that's implied to be more like a higher ranking cop or something like that.
He's a lieutenant. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Let me give it a shot. And he goes in there and he says, I'm just going to ask you a couple questions. What's your favorite color? Blah, blah, blah. And then like the third question ends up being like, what does the rabbit do?
The rabbit jumps.
Yeah. And when Nick Cage says the rabbit jumps, he's like, okay, I'm going to uncuff you. I'm going to leave this door open. 10 seconds after I leave the room, you get your ass out of here. And so of course, He gets out in a very tense scene, trying to get out of there without getting caught.
It was pretty good. I felt stressed for him in that scene.
Yeah, I wasn't being sarcastic. That was good.
Yeah, no, I just I feel like this movie is fairly well put together. I think it's well shot. It's well edited. It felt tense.
during this investigation, or during them like accusing him, he hears the cops mention that the guy was an investigative journalist, right, also, which is relevant. And so my next note just says payphone. Maybe I just thought it was funny that there was a payphone in 2011.
Yeah, he goes to use a payphone. Yeah,
to call. I don't remember who he was calling in that particular point, but
I assume his wife.
Probably. It turns out that this journalist was, he does some more research on this journalist. This journalist was trying to like learn about the secret group.
Well, we basically find out that what he was told was not true. This guy was not a criminal, at least not known to be a criminal, had no criminal past or anything, and was an award-winning, like, activist journalist.
Yeah.
So this is where things start to unravel with this Simon organization, because now we're finding out that maybe these aren't all bad people.
Right. They're trying to cover their tracks at this point, it seems like. And so at some point, this organization finds Will and starts chasing him. There's like a car chase.
Well, so you're skipping the funeral.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a weird freaking scene. So when Will figures out who this guy is, he decides to go to the wake that they're having at a pub. And so here comes the guy who is being accused of murdering this dude. And he just shows up at the wake. And it's mostly, I guess, like reporters and friends, you know, and he starts buying shots for some of his coworkers, asking questions and stuff. And he steals the ID card. Nobody somehow notices that. And things are going pretty well. He's learning stuff and he's getting in until the very end of the conversation, when one of the reporter guys is like, you know, basically calls him out and says, you know, that he's a cop and, you know, don't try and be our friend, you know, type of thing. And that's when Simon's buddies show up.
Yeah. And spot him. And we get like some, okay, so I don't remember all of this exactly, but I remember seeing a bunch of the stunts on this highway chase and going, holy crap, like they actually did these stunts and somebody like was really falling off things. There was some pretty crazy stunt work happening during this chase.
I mean, yeah, they're running down what, you know, appears to be a functioning highway. There's cars and trucks and, you know, Will's like climbing over the side and he's like climbing under the highway, but like in between like pillars and stuff. And one dude gets caught underneath a truck.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good sequence of action, frankly.
It is, and the stunt work was particularly impressive. I don't remember the exact stunt, but yeah, I was very impressed by the way they handled that.
There was like a moment where Will's like running across the highway as like a truck is spinning behind him. And so the truck kind of has to spin just slow enough not to clip him. And it's obviously not Nick. It's some stunt actor, right? Person, yeah. But like, I thought it was pretty well done. It looked really good. Even today watching it, I thought it held up really well.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of the stunts on this were done practically. And so that's why it holds up. One of the guys that works for this organization that we've seen a few times goes and pretends to be a cop, or maybe he was an actual cop. It's kind of, I don't remember, but he goes and tells his wife that, you know, we're going to get your husband out of this. I need you to come with us. You know, he's about to be set free or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, she doesn't know what's going on at this point. So she's like, oh, sure. Yeah. So she gets in the car and it's her and three guys, basically.
It's just two.
Or two guys, whatever. There's more guys than there are her.
Yeah.
And so she starts to realize at some point these guys are not cops. And so she pulls pepper spray, which she was shown to get at the gun store, out of her purse. And she starts pepper spraying these guys in an enclosed space. And this was my note, pepper spray in an enclosed space, because you're never supposed to do that because you're going to end up pepper spraying yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that logic. I think in her position, I also understand why she did what she did. So
I'm saying that part was not super realistic for me, because she would have been running out. Like, I get that she could have gotten the door open and started running away, but she would have definitely been pepper sprayed, breathing it in, and or having in her eyes at that point. So she would not have been able to run full speed and be perfectly fine after that.
That's but fair.
They also like don't chase her.
Not really.
She starts running away and they just get out like rubbing their eyes and just let her go.
Yeah.
So which maybe it's just so bad getting pepper sprayed that you legitimately can't chase anything. I would think you could at least still see shapes or see movement, but I've never been pepper sprayed because
I don't know. I mean, we could test it. Well, we can test it on you if you want. We can record it, put it on our TikTok.
I'm good.
Okay.
If
you want to see Ryan pepper sprayed, please reach out to us.
So I vaguely remember what this is, but you'll have to fill in the blanks. He goes into like this hotel, I think it is.
Yeah.
It's like a really ritzy hotel. Everybody's very wearing nice suits and stuff. And uh-huh. He is not. He's wearing like jeans and a t-shirt or something like that. So he goes into this closet where people have checked in their coats and he puts on a coat, but he puts it over like his crappy coat mm-hmm. and shirt and jeans. So like he looked way more suspicious once he put on the coat. I don't remember what he was doing in that particular area, but yeah,
so he's looking for a car. And so when
that's right. He was the valet thing.
I'm not saying that, you know, he couldn't have like made that leap of logic, but it seemed like a really specific idea to go into a fancy hotel to try and steal a valet ticket out of the coat check. You know, like it just seemed like a lot of steps.
Right. And he was sure that this coat would have a valet ticket in it.
Well, no, he checked a few to be fair. He does he goes through some pockets till he finds something, but it just felt like a lot of steps to get to the car.
Yeah. But I mean, he's not a thief. He's an English teacher or whatever. So
that's true.
So yeah, this is when the Cadillac shows up and it rolls right up to him. And it's like a brand new 2011 Cadillac Escalade.
Music pumping.
The guy, the valet gets out. He's like, man, this is a nice car, sir.
Thanks.
And yeah, he's like, thanks. And so he gets into it and he immediately starts like, He has an address of wherever he's trying to go. So he immediately goes to the Cadillac center console where it shows like a sweeping shot of it. It shows him like start putting the numbers in the console so that he can have his navigation.
So I did have a thought about that because I thought they were going to show more of it because they cut away pretty quick, to be totally fair. There wasn't like a whole demo.
No, but they do go back to it later.
That's true. They do.
Yeah, he goes to the... Is this where he goes? Does he go to the boat storage before he goes to the work?
Oh, no, I guess he goes to the workplace first.
Yeah, so he stole that pass during the funeral that Derek mentioned. And so then he goes to the like office where this thing is made. Whatever magazine or newspaper.
It's a newspaper.
Guy's work store.
Yeah.
And so
they're printing. They're like, there's newspaper. He walks through the production room.
He's like,
with his photo plastered everywhere that he's a suspect.
Yeah,
for
he's
murder.
Got a front page photo and he's literally like walking by stacks of this and he's like subtly covering his face like with his head down. It's not suspicious at all.
And by the way, he's on there being suspected of murdering a dude who works at this place. So you'd think these people would know.
But nobody even bats an eye.
No.
And so eventually he gets up to this guy's cubicle and there's somebody else still working that night. And so he's going through and he finds some stuff and he shoves it in his pocket. And the person that's still working is like, hey, so if you were going to conjugate this noun, would you use an apostrophe before or after the S or something like that? This is the only point in the movie where his like English knowledge, like the fact that he's an English teacher is paid off at all because he goes through like a 5-minute spiel on when you would use this like bit of punctuation and when you wouldn't.
It has to do with when you have a hyphenated phrase.
Is
when
that a piece of punctuation?
When you... Well, it wasn't an apostrophe.
Well,
you're talking
about, okay, yeah. But I said punctuation in the end. I was being sarcastic. We don't need to know the exact details for this podcast. No, you don't. I'm saying that it was some like English nerd, like lit nerd thing to ask. And it's fine if that's what you're into and nerdy about. That's great. But yeah, this is the only time in the movie where it even comes up. That he's a, you know, smart in this one thing. So It was fine. It was just a little weird. Like, if you're going to make such a point of him being an English teacher, then, you know, give that some weight. Like, give him something. At the funeral, also something we didn't mention was that the guys, when he's questioning all these people about this group, they mentioned that nobody knows where this guy kept his research.
Right.
None of them. They're all, keep in mind, they're all investigative journalists.
Mm-hmm.
But none of them know where he keeps his research. And
now,
so
we do learn later that one of those three guys, the one in particular that calls out Will at the end of the conversation, is in Simon's group, or right. Not his cell necessarily, but in the larger organization.
Right.
So, you know, maybe Alan Marsh, who's the reporter, maybe he knew that and was trying to keep stuff, you know, safe.
But also there were other people that worked there that knew about this. So maybe that one guy, sure. But in any case,
he was paranoid, man.
It was a little bit of a leap of faith for me to believe that none of these guys could figure out where this guy kept his research, but this English teacher could go find it. But investigative journalists couldn't figure it out. But anyway, yeah, so he goes, starts going through all this paperwork that he pulled off the dude's desk. And then goes to this boat. There's like a bunch of receipts for a boat storage place. And so he goes to the boat storage place and pays off the cashier guy and to tell him where the boat was and how to get into it. And so he breaks into the boat and finds a bunch of evidence. And right as he finds it, the guy realizes that this guy's on the front page of the newspaper.
Well, no, it's great. A guy comes and delivers a stack of the newspapers while Nick is looking through the boat, and the old guy just sees it like on his counter.
He calls the police immediately. And yeah, Nick runs away as soon as the police get there.
I think that guy owes Will his money back.
Probably, yeah.
Now, I will say this car chase that happens, I thought maybe this was borderline bad green screen driving.
It was green screen driving, but it was not bad. I didn't
really, at least
I didn't mark it as bad. The stuff that we've marked for bad green screen driving was really bad. This one was noticeable, but it was not bad.
All right. I'm trying to get that one, but okay.
I know you are. There's a couple I was trying to get to, but I just couldn't bring myself to. I'm not going to compromise. I'm like Rorschach of the bingo card. No compromise.
I'm definitely in here with you.
Deep cut for all of our Watchmen fans out there. So then we get like a green screen driving car chase that Derek mentioned, and it didn't qualify for bad green screen driving, and it didn't qualify for like slow-mo car chase.
No.
So that was disappointing.
It was a fine general thing. I was a little disappointed. Nothing happened with the train because he like is about to like beat a train and he just kind of like stops.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, ah, I mean, that's the safe thing to do. But
right. Well, Cadillac probably wouldn't let them jump a train in the Cadillac because they were like, we don't want people trying to do this after seeing it in the movie.
That's fair.
But then he gets away and he stops somewhere. And because of these really nice features on this Cadillac, he's able to put the CD into the CD drive and watch a video.
Right, had a DVD player.
I had a DVD player in the center console.
Wonder if that was standard.
It's like flashing by the Cadillac logo while it's watching this video.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, and so he finds out that his friend is in this group, the one that's was introduced at the beginning of the movie. That's the principal and everything else. And so he goes to the guy's house and essentially just like threatens him.
Yeah. So he has a gun now.
Yeah.
I forget.
Well, his wife gave him the gun.
Right. Yeah. There were a couple pieces. Cause they had to meet after he left. After he broke out of the police department, he like sneaks to meet her and he explains everything.
Yeah.
So she's now in on it at this point and she gives him the gun. Right. Yeah. Cause she's got it. Now we're caught up.
So he goes and threatens his friend cause he wants to know where Simon's at or how he can get in touch with Simon, whatever.
He wants Simon's real name.
Yeah. And his friend is like, I can't do that. And I don't even remember how that scene ended. He didn't kill his friend or anything.
No, I think he gets the name. I mean, I think at the end of the day, he threatens him enough to get it, and you know.
Yeah, maybe. And then I have another note. This is such nice features on this Cadillac because I'm pretty sure they go back to like the navigation or something and do something with it. They're just making sure to show all like the infotainment options available on this Cadillac. If you want to be like Nick Cage in Seeking Justice and steal a Cadillac Escalade, you too could have all these nice features.
In 2011.
Yeah. And then my next note says set up at the Superdome. Oh, it's because so he calls
This,
Simon.
I thought this was great. I thought
Yeah,
this
he
was so great.
so when in the way that we didn't really dive into it, but earlier in the movie when Simon's like giving him instructions on what to do, it's very like step-by-step instructions. So he'll call and say something along the lines of like go to the trash can at 11:43. Once you see the trash can, pull a piece of garbage out of it and look at it, and then put it back into the trash can. Like, it's just very specific actions. And so Nick Cage's character basically makes him go through a bunch of these actions.
He trolls him. It's so good.
Yeah, he's like, go to the bathroom and take a piss, which is legitimately one of the things he tells him to do. And then he's like, go get a glizzy from the hot dog stand. And like, you know, he has to go to the hot dog stand. He shows up behind him. You know, there was a bunch of instructions before that, but it was just,
Was
yeah,
funny. I
he was
liked it.
basically making him run through all this. Indie guy is getting increasingly frustrated as it happens.
Trolling Simon.
Yeah. And so I can't remember how they get to this point because they go to this abandoned mall. He's like, I've got your wife, you've got this tape,
Well,
let's
because while this is
trade.
happening, while Will is trolling Simon, we find out that the friend, and we've never even said his name, Jimmy, no, finds out where Laura is. So Laura's holed up at this hotel that's from earlier in the movie. That's like a kind of a secret romantic place for Laura and Will, and she's holed up there waiting for him. And Jimmy finds out from the other friend, Trudy, the other woman, you know, where she is. And he basically goes with one of Simon's other guys and they break into the room and kidnap her.
Well, they don't really break in. She opens the door for him and he goes in. But it was under false pretenses, so I guess you could consider that breaking in.
I did notice that the hotel did not have a peephole in the door. And I'm not saying that that doesn't exist, but that I've never stayed in a hotel that didn't have peepholes in the door.
Yeah. So he's like, well, we've got your wife and you've got this tape that I want, which is the tape with all the evidence. It was the recording we saw at the beginning of the movie, where it's a guy that's in the organization basically admitting everything. And so, yeah, so they're like, let's go over to this abandoned mall. It's just right across the street. And we've got your wife there and you can give us the recording and we'll give you your wife. And so, being as smart as he is as a teacher, he's like, oh yeah, so let's follow these murderers to an abandoned mall across the street while a really loud game is going on next door and nothing will be heard. And so yeah, he follows the murderers to the abandoned mall. So that's fun.
The set was
And
cool, though. I thought it was a good
it was
set
a cool
piece.
set. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's like a big showdown, where they're getting ready to murder Will and his wife, and one of the people is getting ready to murder Will and his wife was his friend,
Yeah, Jimmy's there.
Jimmy. And so instead of being a part of that murder, he shoots Simon, I think, or shoots one of the guys on Simon's side. And so that causes everybody to disperse. And so we get like the big peak, you know, fight action sequence. Which was good. I
It
mean,
was good.
it wasn't like a lot of choreography or anything like that. It was just you know, interesting ending to the movie.
Well, I kind of like that it didn't feel overly like orchestrated because, you know, so Simon kills Jimmy. Really, there's only three people left, you know, for the bulk of it, Simon, Will, and Laura. Will and Laura don't have any background in fighting or
Right.
combat, right? And she's got for most of the scene, she has her hands zip tied together. She eventually breaks out of that. But I kind of liked that it felt very disorganized.
Yeah. And so there's a bunch of action happening, and eventually I think Jimmy dies and Simon dies. A bunch of people die, but not Will or Laura.
Well, so the big kind of climax of it is Will is just like beating Simon's face, and Laura kind of tells him to stop for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why, but then Simon basically pulls he and Will off the ledge down on top of the escalator, which I don't care if you're a stunt actor or not, that could not feel good.
Right. It was a rubber escalator.
I hope so. It looked painful. So they're all beat up and they're down on the ground and all that other stuff, you know, and she ends up shooting and killing Simon from up top the escalator. And I thought that was awesome because you kind of see this arc of her doing all this preparation after the beginning events where she's learning how to shoot and she's got, you know, weapons at her disposal now. And she's really like preparing herself for the future. And Will's, you know, he's originally against her having a gun and things of that nature. And, you know, she kind of shows that she can, you know, she's at least as capable, if not more capable, and she's, you know, very level-headed in the situation and all of that. I thought it was kind of a cool way to wrap up the movie.
Yeah, complete her arc.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he dies, and then the cop that let Will go earlier in the movie comes in. He's like, I didn't see nothing. It seems like it's just a standard, you know, drug deal gone bad or something like that. And so Will's like, are you sure that's how you want to play this? And he's like, yeah, seems standard to me. And then they just let him go. And yeah, my last note was bad newspaper guy. I don't remember why.
Yeah. So, you know, they leave, the cop, the lieutenant kind of handles everything, you know, so to speak. And then some amount of time has passed. We don't know how much, they don't tell us, but we see Will returning to the, the press place with the evidence, and he's meeting the guy that kind of told him off at the wake, and the guy takes it, you know, and then he says, you know, the rabbit jumps and walks away, which is basically telling Will that, like, you just gave the evidence back to the main group, so good luck with that.
Yeah, and I thought that would have been an interesting setup for another movie, not necessarily with Nick Cage, but the organization was really interesting, and like, knowing that the bit that we saw wasn't necessarily how the there was enough in that we saw where of the organization where we go, is this how the organization normally operates? Like, where's the line? Where did the Simon kick in and start to ruin this way the group operates? And it would have been cool to get more information on that kind of like underground.
Yeah. You know,
group.
Well, cause the way this group kind of comes into being is very interesting. It's a post Katrina New Orleans. There was a lot of crime and there was a lot of poverty issues. And this group was supposedly filling the space where the police force was either unwilling or unable to do those things, right? That's the narrative. Yeah. And so, you know, there is that kind of vigilante Batman style justice that is what the original pitch is to Will in the hospital. And then there's what Simon's actually doing, which is extremely self-serving, right? So there is that question. I think it would have been really interesting to see what the rest of this group is kind of like, because he kind of gets invited to it.
Yeah, at the end, they're asking him if he wants to be a part of this group anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they could have had it be with Nick Cage and have him be a part of the group in the future.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do a ton of sequels, but I think that would have been interesting.
I mean, in these days, everything's a sequel or a reboot, right? And a lot of the movies that we've watched with Nick Cage, you could tell they wanted to make it a franchise, and there was like a lot of setups. This one, I don't think they set out to do a franchise, or if they did, it was much more subtle. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the ones that would have been a stronger contender to be a franchise had, you know, had that gone its way.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they just left it as like an open ending.
Right.
Right.
They weren't saying we're going to cut it off here, but we're not planning on doing a sequel or anything. So
right. Versus say, Kill Chain.
Yeah.
Right. Where he, you know, leaves to go find, you know, help the old sniper's daughter. Right. That was clearly meant to like have more to that story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the movie. you know, something we've been doing for the past few movies is that I've been looking up some reviews online and what people thought of the movies. So I can find a few here and see what we agree with, see what we don't. On IMDb, the user SMS1999 wrote, "Why was this movie made? 1 out of 10.
That's harsh.
"From the moment Nicolas Cage attempted to act like a tough yet caring inner city teacher, I knew this movie was unrealistic. And it only gets more and more fantastical from there. Seeking Justice suffers from the weight of being entirely unbelievable and not in the good way. If the movie had unexpectedly transported the characters to a magic fairyland, this movie would have been more believable and interesting.
Jeez.
In Seeking Justice, the hungry rabbit jumps deep down into a rabbit hole it can never escape. Nick Cage is just plain bad in this movie. To be fair to Cage, he was cast in a horrible role that doesn't fit his limited range as an actor." Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
That's a shot there.
Whoa.
Yeah. Let's see. "If you are suffering from insomnia, watch this film."
Come on. That's excessive. These are excessive.
The user Agonother on IMDb says, "Two-dimensional nonsense about cartoon vigilantes. Secret cartoon vigilantes."
I'm not sure what part was cartoony.
And that it was the worst movie ever. here's a 2 out of 10. NRA gave too much money to the producers to show the need for guns in Gunslinger America. It is so flagrant that the NRA must have contributed a fortune to this movie, whose sole purpose is to show the value and need of owning a gun and gun for survival in today's armed America. I am just glad to be a Canadian who does not need to walk around with guns every day in fear of my neighbors. What a tragic place America has become."
Oh man.
Man,
I feel like I watched a different movie.
I know. I mean, I didn't really get political. I could see how somebody could make a really big stretch into that, but I did not really get political undertones for this movie.
I mean, I don't know. Look, if you're going to take a deal with a vigilante justice group, then I think you have to make the assumption that weapons are involved.
There's probably going to be some guns, yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, that's really what it's about. It's not like they bumped into this dude at the Target, you know? Like,
okay, so here's some good reviews.
Okay, all right, here we go.
PWNYCNY says, "Nicolas Cage's best movie in years. He is in top form. The story itself is taut, crisp, engaging, and original. In fact, there is little about this movie which can be criticized. The story moves it forward at a brisk pace." I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it. That's a little embellished. It's not a 10 out of 10 movie for me, but I mean, I don't know if saying the story is taut and original is wholly true, but it, sure.
I don't know. I felt like it was a pretty original story. I mean, it has some beats that obviously are not, but I mean, things have to happen. I think the overall plot was pretty original.
Shomini491 said, "Seeking Justice and Dying to the Light are two favorite Nicolas Cage movies of the past few years. Seeking Justice is exciting, thrilling, and keeps you on the edge of your seat." I'll agree with that.
Dying in the Light, though, is a sad, depressing slog.
It was, I don't put that. If that's what you're considering right alongside this, I cannot agree with that. Here you go, though. We rent every Nicolas Cage movie. Every movie that he makes, and have enjoyed all of them because he's a great, underrated, totally believable actor in every film. He's the best actor making movies currently in Hollywood. He can play absolutely any part and be convincing. So Shomini 491-652-355. If you're out there, and you're hearing this podcast, reach out to us. I want to bring you on for a special guest spot for one of our podcasts, just for a little quick, you know, chat about Nicolas Cage, because you're somebody that I would like to talk to. I love the little story you told there, but yeah, I don't necessarily agree this is a 10 out of 10 movie, but yeah, if you can prove you're this person, then reach out to us on social media and I want to talk to you. So I mean,
all right.
It's what's funny is if you compare these 1 to 10 to 10 out of 10, it's like they watch two different movies.
That's what it feels like.
They couldn't be further apart. And we're, I think, somewhere in the middle of two, probably leaning more towards one side than the other, but yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder, like with those really negative reviews, sometimes I wonder what they think is a good movie.
Well, and I also wonder what's the motivation to go on IMDb and give this a 1 out of 10? Were you so offended by this movie? It was so terrible that you were like, I'm going to go on IMDb and just write the worst fucking review I've ever seen and tell everybody so that they don't waste their time on this stupid movie.
Well, hey, you can watch it for free on Freevee.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks to Nicolas Cage's production company for owning part of Freevee, I assume.
I don't know. No, it's an Amazon thing. Freevee's Amazon. Enough. Yeah. All right. Well, we got to rate this thing.
Yeah.
We got to rate this bad boy. So we have our Cage scale, which we rate movies from 0 to 20, 0 low, 20 high. We have overall quality. So good movie, bad movie. And then overall caginess. These are two separate metrics that we rate these on. And I think you went first last week. So I think I'll go first this week. Does that sound right? Yeah. Okay. So overall quality, I mean, I think this is a good movie. I think it's got a lot of positive aspects to it. There was one scene in particular that we kind of skipped over where he breaks into the high school to steal some phones that have been confiscated. And he comes across that the same kid that he decked earlier and some others doing like graffiti and stuff. And he explains that he's been like arrested for murder. And the kid, there's like this moment between the two of them. And I really like that scene. I like Nick kind of playing against, you know, normal type. It's not like his big leading role type, leading man type role. So I really liked it quite a bit. I'm not going to go too crazy high with it though. So I think I'm going to go with a 12.
Yeah. I mean, so it definitely falls into the average category for me on Nick Cage, which for me is like 8 to 12 on our scale of 1 to 20. That's like my average range. And it can be right in the middle, or usually it leans towards the lower or the higher. And on this one, it was definitely like borderline a good movie. So I was going to put it at a 12 as well. So we're definitely in agreement on that. Yes. It's at the peak of what I would consider an average Nick Cage movie. As much as little of a compliment as that sounds like it is. I mean, I did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Definitely better, more than I expected to.
Absolutely. I mean, especially given the synopsis and everything, I was expecting this to be very much like a Stolen Rage type movie. Right. And it's certainly better than those.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right. So now we have overall caginess. And aside from very early on in that kind of dance Mardi Gras rave scene, there isn't a whole lot in here.
No, it's pretty low. We've kind of had a streak of uncagey movies.
Yeah.
Recently.
I agree.
So I'd put it like a 2 or 3. I mean, it was not cagey really at all outside of one scene, maybe.
So I was going to say a 3. So do you want to do a 2 or a 3?
3 is fine.
Okay. So we got a 12 on quality and a 3 on caginess. So that's pretty straightforward there. And now we got to figure out, so we have our Wheelo Cage where we spin to find out which movie we're going to watch, and we need to replace Seeking Justice on the wheel. So the movie joining the wheel is Valley Girl. Valley Girl joins the wheel. And so to find out which Nicolas Cage movie we're going to talk about next on the show, you will have to watch our Wheelo Cage spins. You can go to comingofcage.com or follow us at Coming of Cage or subscribe to the Jericho Studios YouTube channel. We got lots of good movies on the wheel right now that I'm sure people would find very, very interesting. So be sure to check that out. Ryan, anything else on Seeking Justice?
Nope. I mean, if you're looking for a fun popcorn movie for, you know, a date night or something, and well, maybe not for a date night. It's not great for a date night. But yeah, if you're just looking to watch a fun popcorn movie, maybe not fun either. But if you're looking to watch an entertaining popcorn movie, I think this is a good one for that. So
awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We are the Coming of Cage podcast. We'll catch you next time. Thank you for listening to the Coming of Cage podcast, a Jericho Studios production. We're hosted by Ryan Kucher and me, Derek Mayer. You can find all our links at comingofcage.com and subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice. Want to see us? Subscribe to the Jericho Studios YouTube channel for video versions of the show. Keep on caging on.